Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Officer Mike DeVito of the Milford Police Department is here this morning. Hey, Officer DeVito, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you this morning?
I'm doing okay. I was actually at a football, like a little football gathering at my brother's yesterday, and it was just family. But my father, who loves to just, put news on my show, said, hey, you heard about this new movie on Netflix? I said, no, Dad, I have no idea what you're talking about. And he said, Cuties, it's all over the news. And of course, I'm like, well, I haven't heard about it. Basically, this show, or this movie, I should say, which came over from Europe, but it aired starting last week on Netflix. It exploits 11-year-old girls, basically. And I've seen enough clips of it to say, okay, I could see why people are really upset about it. It is certainly pretty provocative. And it's, you know, it's these... It's pretty, I don't know if you've seen it at all. Have you watched anything?
No, I followed it a little bit, but certainly it's nothing that's piqued my interest at all. So, but
yeah.
I understand the debate that's ensuing right now. I've read Netflix, their spokesman's, view on it. And then, of course, the outcry is, coming from all different angles.
Yeah.
So... Your dad, it's kind of odd transition. He went from talking high school football to that.
I know, and I apologize.
You should have stuck
yeah.
with the high school football.
I know, and I wish we could, because God, it's a lot simpler just talking about football than it is this. But instead of getting into the actual show itself, it did
right.
actually make me kind of think. Okay, well, we are in a pandemic, and if you look at what's going on just in the everyday life here in Connecticut, it did kind of pique my interest to know. Before, when we weren't in a pandemic, and when the courts were all open and we were seeing dozens of cases a day, things have been kind of reserved right now because of the coronavirus. So I was wondering, actually, from a police perspective, it has to be very challenging for you guys to be able to find sexual predators. When you're talking about people who have who prey on young, boys and girls,
right.
Because I have also heard about stories of MAPS, people who are minor attracted people or something. I don't know. So I was just wondering, from your perspective, how challenging it has been for police to track, predators of young children, or be able to monitor that.
Right. So let's just start with the first point to put your dad at ease, for lack of a better term. So, well, fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, obviously, we'll say unfortunately, these predators are not going to be overly encouraged or swayed by what they see or don't see on TV. They're so disturbed that what I'm trying to say is that people that aren't the least bit interested in pedophilia aren't going to have their mind changed by a series or a show or
anything. I got
show.
You. So this
okay?
movie's not so going
to
say turn people
good or bad,
into pedophiles.
But the point being, yeah, this is these people are so disturbed that they're far deeper. We're chasing them on the dark web, and they're not the information they get from these shows that are, however controversial, are nothing compared to how deep they are.
Okay.
And then, fortunately, if there is someone who is not on the dark web or isn't there, they're not going to be all of a sudden encouraged. These are deeply embedded genes that they have, and that's what leads them to this, disturbing activity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as us, chasing them, I spent a lot of time with our computer crimes specialist who works, really, he works cases nationally and statewide, not just our. He assists a lot of different departments on tracking these incidents, and they are very involved and very intricate, but fortunately, he does get some insight from the FBI when they are able to watch and monitor people that are trolling on these particular sites, which are, like I said, way, way worse and way more disturbing than a Netflix series of,
mm-hmm.
11-year-old girls. In, nonetheless, they are in, sexually explicit. Kind of, you've seen it or heard about it. But where these guys troll is way worse And also, as you mentioned at the beginning, a lot more complicated for us to track them and try to stay, you know, but, you know, at least even with them, or hopefully one step ahead of them, but it's very difficult.
Well, because, you know, and please correct me, because obviously, Officer DeVito, I'm not a cop. Clearly, this is what I'm doing. So this is why I turn to people like you. You know, I thought it was almost, I don't want to say easier, but sometimes it's a little bit easier when you can track the creeps who are either lingering around schoolhouses or they're in public areas where, you know, kids usually flock to. But kids aren't flocking anywhere right now because half the time they're not even in school. They're at home learning. So I would think everything is kind of online for the most part, which makes it a lot more challenging, I would think, for you guys.
Right. So it's. It, I guess it's kind of good as a parent, as I was a parent of a young girl, you know, hundreds of years ago. But to know that they're much more likely to, you know, to be in their basement on the internet than they are outside of a playground at school or at the rec center or something like that. So that's a little bit comforting. But when these cases are cracked, it's very disturbing. They'll have, you know, anywhere from, you know, thousands to multiple thousands of images on their computers, and that's how they kind of get gig, because they're on these sites. They're not glancing on them. You don't. I always, because I kid with my computer specialist, like, hey, you can't like accidentally get on this and they get flagged by the FBI. He's like, no. He goes, you have to, you know, you have to really.
You're like committed.
Go through a bunch of channels to get to it. Yeah, you have to really work hard to get into these deep dark circles that they travel in, and once they do, they're downloading, like I said, thousands and thousands of images, and that's certainly very disturbing.
Good Lord. For parents right now who may be listening and just wondering, you know, kids are walking to school or whatever the case may be, or they have to go back to work and they're trying to balance the two, is there anything that they could proactively talk to their kids about? I know some people have said, you know, if you've got preteens or teens at home and let's say they stumble on something like this Netflix, because of course people, they did this with 13 Reasons Why, you know, I think there have been controversial things that have gone on Netflix before that have been in question, and I think this is just another one. But is there anything that you would recommend for parents to kind of get involved and talk to their kids about it?
Yeah, it's the age-old thing, you know. So I, you know, had already gone through it, and then I have counseled many of my colleagues, my friends who have, you know, kids that are maybe a full generation younger than mine. I said, it's just a battle as a parent and with their kids is, you know, how much is too much as far as, you know, monitoring their kids. I know people who've gone the route of, you know, literally, you know, tracking every movement on their phone. And, I, you know, personally, I thought that was a little bit overbearing, because I said, once they get out, they're going to go, they'll go off the rails. So it's just that fine line between, you have to give them a little bit of space, but you do have to monitor, you know, what they're doing, you know, on their, which is usually their phone. They use their phone a lot more than their other devices. But nonetheless, both of them, we do have to kind of monitor them and let them know that you're, you know, at least inquiring, and, you know, maybe. So it's just a line that you have to cross as a parent. You know, decide where you want to be on it, and do you want to watch every movement or just, you know, hover slightly, and then that would also be dictated by if you have coupled that with some other, you know, suspicious activities or movements or maybe conversations that you may have stumbled on, or if you sometimes you lose track of your kids a little when they're supposed to be at A and B and they end up not being, so that will heighten your concerns and maybe increase your awareness. So that's the kind of line you have to find, because this device, as I say that because I have two in front of me right now, that'll be the avenue they take to get themselves involved in any kind of you know, suspicious or, you know, dangerous activities, contacts.
Officer Mike DeVito of the Milford Police Department, thank you for weighing in on this. I know not a very comfortable topic, but certainly something that a lot of people, I guess, are talking about right now, so I appreciate it.
We know we have no limits. We'll go to the uncomfortable spots, because that's what the listeners want to hear. So
yeah, I appreciate it, though. Thank you.
My pleasure. We'll talk next week, all right, Melissa?
Sounds good. Thank you, Officer Mike DeVito. Well, thank God the guy with the big voice at least knew who he was talking to. Senator Tony Wong, I am so sorry about that. How are you this morning?
I'm wonderful, Melissa, and happy Monday to everyone.
Yes, thank you. Happy Monday to you too, my friend. Well, as you know, we didn't really get that far last week, quite frankly. Football is still, I guess, probably not happening this fall. Who knows? It's kind of still a question mark. But why can't we at least give these kids a definitive answer? Either do spring season or just scrap it all together and let's start again next year. Can you weigh in on this? I feel like it's emotionally draining for these kids, coaches, families. I mean, what gives?
I think the struggle and the frustration is compounded by the lack of decisiveness from the governor's office and the guidance that's given by DPH. It's not a cancellation. It's not a flat out no, but it's forced the hand of our superintendents and SEAC to be able to continue with any direction because they're in a no-win situation. So the frustration ultimately is the indecisiveness, and it really is a roller coaster for these young athletes, their parents, and these coaches, because they love to do it. They see all their classmates playing volleyball, soccer, field hockey, and they are sidelined because of bureaucrats who don't fully understand the precautions that they're taking to go to school, to participate, and to respect the social distancing that's necessary. And the governor did quip the fact that it's not only the sport, playing of the sport, it's the sidelines and the social contacts. But you know what? You're not even giving these kids a chance.
Mm-hmm.
That's the frustration. And the guidance goes nowhere because it's stuck in the middle. I think your suggestion of looking and saying, hey, maybe we're losing the fall season. Perhaps we should plan for a spring season with the guidelines and to kind of see the effects of what school has been and how these other sports have been. Perhaps it gives some sense of focus for these student-athletes because ultimately it's about being a student-athlete and it's about the social-emotional learning dynamic. You're providing it for other student-athletes, but you're denying it to the football players and only high school football players, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the inconsistency in policy, Melissa, is alarming to me because we're allowing youth football to exist. We're allowing travel sports to exist. Where is the difference in regards to playing of the sport?
Mm-hmm.
You're only punishing high school football athletes. And to me, that is unfair, and it's inconsistent, and it's bad policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the reason I went for spring at this point is because I was always taught as a kid, Tony, and of course everybody is taught differently, but when I was a kid, my mom always said, give me the facts and I can move forward. That's something I learned since I was a little kid, which is give me the facts and I can move forward. We're not giving these kids the facts. We're literally saying, well, we're still deciding what to do. And it's the middle of September. We have been debating this for 3+ months and we still can't come up with a definitive decision. To me, I think I understand the idea of, look, we can't even get all kids to be in school full time. Most school districts are hybrid at this point. So I understand that education comes first. But sort of to your point, if we're going to allow every other student athlete to have somewhat of a definitive season, why can't we at least say, hey, you know what, guys? We're worried about what football is going to look like. So let's just focus on the fact that we've got to get through the first semester of school and let's go with you're going to have a spring season. I mean, at least give them that. I think it's insane that we're still debating a fall season when we're in the middle of the fall right now. I don't know why we're still debating it. And I just think that it's not fair. It's so emotionally draining for these kids.
The medical facts are not been validated and documented. That's another frustration is we've been basing our decision on this COVID pandemic based upon medical facts. In this case, it's just the guidance and their disparate medical data out there. And DPH and the governor's office has not given a definitive medical analysis of why football versus any other sport is far more dangerous.
Senator,
again, another inconsistency.
Yeah, I was going to say, here's another inconsistency, which I don't know if you could speak to this, but over the summer, when these talks were going on, the department said that they felt high-risk sports were a no-go, essentially. They threw girls volleyball in there. So how did that get in? How did that change?
Well,
how did it go from, okay, it's high-risk, but we could give the okay for that? How did it go from the same category as football, but now it's being played, but football hasn't moved?
Again, this is why for people that may be saying you shouldn't play, it's far too dangerous. But the bottom line is I want a consistency in policy.
Sure.
And right now, you don't have it. These kids are looking over their shoulder and finding classmates playing sports when they are denied the opportunity. I think more importantly is a broader policy question that I posed to the governor's office is this. If you're insisting in pushing back and starting school, to be able to insist on a hybrid system or a system in which you want kids into school and assuming that risk, then you need to understand that playing any sport and anything else that we do is an assumption of risk. To say flat out, you can't have this versus others is an inconsistency in a broader COVID pandemic policy. And we're going to talk a little bit, I hope, in regards to some of the concerns that have been raised in regards to the outbreak that may be the incidence of cases in New Haven and West Haven. The problem on West Bridgeport, but the challenge ultimately is we have to manage risk. And we've done a great job as a state keeping our risk data down. How about we manage it and continue moving forward, not backwards or at a standstill of uncertainty?
Now, this morning, one Bridgeport Middle School is closed because of one positive result for the coronavirus. Last week, we saw New Milford completely shut down. Naugatuck shut down a school as well. If cohorting isn't working, Senator, for elementary and middle schools, that kind of worries me about the whole state in general. What can you tell me about Fairfield when it comes to the dynamics, the cohorting, the track and trace? What's happening there?
It's alarming to me because when you're looking at middle schools having cases where we're not able to manage it, how are you going to manage the tracing and the tracking and the cohorting of high school students
who are mobile? Yep. I don't know.
Car and social dynamics that are far more ranging.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it is a real challenge. And that's where we go back to the inconsistency in policy. We are driving to put students back to school, despite some of the concerns of our teachers and some of the concerns of the realities that we're facing right now. But at the same time, we're not managing it to understand that, you know, we're assuming the risk, let's manage it. And the inconsistency in policy is a struggle for me because this administration opens itself to extreme criticism for people to say, we shouldn't be going to school right now. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be participating in these activities. And I'm extremely concerned, and the teachers have sounded the alarms, which are not readily heeded. And then you've got parents that have said, we're extremely concerned about our ability to manage this with a population that's extremely mobile and not always practicing social distancing.
Mm-hmm.
But the other important part is this. The social-emotional learning dynamic, what the feedback I got from students, teachers, and parents is this. This hybrid system is incomplete. It's kind of virtually half of the time and hybrid other half of the time. There's no consistency. There's no depth to the educational learning system. You know, so I think that's another part of the struggle that's not readily accounted for is the fact that the educational experience is not as extensive and robust as we thought it to be in urging the risk of putting students back in school. So I think we have to do a far better job right now and evaluate the back to school dynamic and really assess and balance the risk. And again, I go back, the inconsistency in policy as it relates to either sports or anything else is a problem for this administration moving forward because people are going to start saying, why are you doing this but not that? And that's a struggle. You know, when the early part of this pandemic, this administration had a consistent policy. It was all this and nothing else. That gave guidelines and it brought up some people who may disagree, but it was unified in its application and we could manage it better. Right now, I think we're at a stage of stage three in the opening where we're kind of going halfway, but there's no consistency.
Mm.
And as a policymaker, we want to be able to give clear guidelines. Whether it's liked or not, we can at least have a clear policy and say, let's look at this, let's uniformly apply it, and let's look at the results and move forward and adapt if we have to. But right now, it's been piecemeal, And it's extremely frustrating and potentially impacting the health and safety of our students and teachers.
State Senator Tony Huang, thank you so much for coming on this morning and weighing in on these topics. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And if I could take a moment to thank you and the entire station for the memorial event that you did on 9/11. It was emotional, but it gave a respect and an honor and a recognition to those that were lost during that tragedy, but also the recognition of family members and people whose lives been irreparably changed to share their emotions. It's very cathartic. So I want to really thank you for that opportunity that you gave people to have an opportunity to share and perhaps, you know, relieve some of the pressure and the trauma that they've endured. It's a very important event. So thank you for doing it.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you, Senator Huang. I appreciate it. Yeah, I think we're going to plan on doing that every year going forward. I think it's really important. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, it's an important part of the healing process. Mm-hmm. And so thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful. I really wish you could change your ad sequence so now I don't have to hear a Yankee ad before I come on.
Oh, Bob. Shots fired right in the beginning. Good Lord. I love that. I love that. But you know I married a Boston Red Sox fan, right? So, I mean, it's all good.
There's hope.
God loves all of us, right? Isn't that the message?
Right.
God loves us all. Well, yeah. I love this topic. Not that you ever don't have a good topic, but this one's a great one because I think we're all guilty of at some point doing this, or maybe we're doing it right now, and it's a scorecard marriage. And what this basically is kind of holding on to the couple of things that your spouse just doesn't do so great. And then you sort of harbor those bad feelings towards them. For example, I'll throw myself under the bus. I am not so great at making sure that I take my clothing that I leave folded on our tub or right near our sink and making sure that I fold them at the end of the day and hang them back up in the closet. That drives my husband crazy. But he has let me know about that instead of harboring it and holding on to it. So in 20 years, when I ask him why he hates me, he says, well, you never hung your clothing up in the bathroom. So how guilty or how easy, I should say, is it to have a scorecard in your marriage?
Yeah. So it really, first of all, like, you're just normal, right? I'm normal.
Oh, my God. Thank you for calling me normal. That's so nice of you.
Well, let me think about that again.
There you go.
But it's just normal human nature that we look at what is happening or not happening to meet our needs. It's just natural. So one would be just, it's not uncommon for us just to think that way. You know, we do just do that. We keep a mental checklist of what he or she is doing or not doing to meet my needs. So it is kind of fairly natural for us to do that. You know, it does piggyback. A few weeks ago, I did talk about a me marriage versus a we marriage. This is a me marriage characteristic.
Mm.
We are basically self-centered. We basically look for things that he or she is not doing. You know, we have this mental checklist of he or she is not doing as much as me. That's kind of the underlying belief system that's going on. And in times of stress or physical depletion, when you feel depleted or tired, we tend to do this more. And it's not just how many things. So I know for me, my wife does like 10 times more than I do, okay? But I do big things. So for me, my mental checklist is, yeah, you know, there's all these things, but I do these big things. So when I find myself doing that, again, I have the awareness at least to say, okay, Bob, like, you're going there again. You know, if I give you a real example, I found myself doing this a couple of years ago that I don't know why, maybe I was just tired or whatever, but I just found myself going there more than normal I'm not being appreciated because of all the things I do really with the pool, with the lawn, with all this. So I caught myself and I said, you know what? And I read someplace to do this. I started a practice in the morning of writing down two or three things that I appreciate about my wife, about
Love
Karen,
that.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I did. And you know what? It's so funny that starting the day, just thinking about one or two things that she does changed and stopped me from going to that negative scorecard keeping place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, and this happens all the time. Even this morning, like I said, I'm going on the radio in a few minutes. I'm in the kitchen My glasses are out. My teacup's out. I made a mess, to be honest with you. I said, you know what? I'm going to the radio to keep a scorecard married. I better clean this up.
So, love that.
We do this, right?
It's so true. And I think too, Bob, I think it's also easy. This is where human beings are flawed. But we have a lot of pride. You know what? I think it's so funny, but you know, the person you're supposed to love the most, we are so quick to get upset with them and to look at ourselves and go, oh, but poor me. And I mean, I think both my spouse and I have had that in our relationship. And it's so easy to find, well, I did 6 things today. And I used to feel that way when we first had Chase. I felt like, okay, I go to my job, I come home and I watch my kid. And it's like, well, what were you doing all day? And I think to myself, well, why don't you just pull back for a hot second there, sweetheart, and think about what your husband does? You know, like you just mentioned, I got to be honest, I don't want to get up on Saturday mornings at 6 o'clock and do the lawn. My husband does it without even being asked. He does things that I don't want to do or I have no desire to do, and he just does it, and he's a truck horse. And I just think it's so easy sometimes when we're so stuck in ourselves to notice, well, I've done 10 things today and technically he only did 3, so he's not making the grade, when really look at, you know, the whole picture here. And I just think we're so quick to get mad at the person we're supposed to love the most. I think it's interesting how prideful we kind of are as human beings, but that's why we're flawed.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. That's why I said, that's why I started with, it's kind of a natural thing that we all do.
Mm-hmm.
So the key is, as you said, and as I reflected back on, is that initial self-awareness. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now I will say, so there's kind of 3 things I just want to talk about. One is actually this negative scorecard keeping, which are things that we just talked about.
Yes.
I do these 10 things, but he only does 3. And I'm thinking, well, my 3 things are bigger than your 10 things, right? That's kind of like normal.
Right.
The two things I'll introduce is that, now there's a real aspect to this, and I'll call it a frustrated scorecard keeping marriage. And that's where legitimately there are things that are unbalanced and things that are uneven that realistically you need to sit down and have a discussion. That is one person doing like way too much. So you do, when you get into that frustration scorecard keeping, you need to have a conversation. That conversation should be, hey, I know I don't see everything, so maybe let's just talk about how you see our division of labor going and how's I think. And you have a conversation about that. So you kind of take that frustration scorecard keeping and then talk about it, okay?
And I think be afraid to ask, where can you pick up the slack? Like I know, like I said, in the beginning, my husband felt horrible. He said, look, I'm at work all day, so I don't know how I'm supposed to take some of the weight off of Chase. And I said to him, well, it would be nice if once or twice a week I could go to bed early because I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning for work. So once or twice a week, depending on how my energy is, Derek will literally say, go to bed at 6 o'clock. And he takes the next 2 hours and I go to bed 2 hours early and he just hangs out with Chase and does that. And it just makes a world of difference for me, even though it maybe feels like, well, he's the dad, he's not babysitting. Well, it means a lot to me because I need the energy, and it truly outweighs doing 6 chores that day. Having him let me go to bed early, it almost like evens the playing field.
Yeah. And you know what? And you're right. And it does start with, okay, help me understand the situation. Help me see things how you see them. Right. So it starts with that perspective of understanding. And I want to learn about how you see things. I mean, that's how this conversation should start. You know, what's really interesting, when I thought about this topic and I just Googled it, like the top sites that came up were from therapists that said, don't keep score.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now I'm saying, I'll just land on this. You should keep score. Absolutely, you should keep score. You keep score of the positive things that your spouse is doing. That's what we should keep score about. That changes everything. As I gave you my example, I started to flip the switch with, I'm starting with just 1 or 2 things I appreciate about Karen. So I do believe in a scorecard marriage, but I believe in a positive, appreciative scorecard keeping marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the key right there.
Yeah, I love that. Well, I was going to say, Bob, if people need help coming up with maybe how to do a positive scorecard marriage, is there a way they could reach out to you?
Yep, great. Actually, a listener emailed me last week, so I really enjoy that. So, yeah, it's B Donovan, DONOVAN, @blackrock.org.
Simple enough. Well, Bob, I love the idea of flipping sort of just our brains on a scorecard marriage and just making it positive and sort of checking in more with our spouses. I love that. Thank you.
All right, Melissa, take care.